Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
Welcome to Seattle Public Library and Design the Life You Live with author Aishe Borsell. I think we're going to have a really exciting night tonight. To introduce Aishe will be Michael Ellsworth. He's the co-founder of the design firm Civilization. Let's give a warm welcome to Michael Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone. Thank you all so much for coming out tonight and joining us for this life-changing workshop. As she said, I'm Michael Ellsworth, co-founder of Civilization, and we're really honored to help with this event tonight. And I'm really honored to introduce Aishe Borsell. We're so happy that you added this stop to your book tour. And this book, Design the Life You Love, grew out of workshops and talks that she's been doing for a few years. So for those of you who might not be familiar with Aishe's work, Aishe is an industrial designer by trade, and she's been designing award-winning products for over 20 years. She is the co-founder of Borsell & Seck, an innovative design studio in New York that partners with leading brands from all over the world. Over the course of her career, she has designed office systems for Herman Miller, kitchen gadgets for Target, and packaging for Johnson & Johnson. All of us have probably come in contact with her work at one point. Well, I'm excited to start designing my life, so I'm going to turn it over to Aishe. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me? All right. It's such a pleasure to be here with you tonight, and thank you so much for coming. Space of Design and Beauty. And Michael, thank you so much. And my friend George Simmons, thank you. And thank you to the Seattle Public Library for Michael, you said that adding the Seattle to the book tour, but actually everything started with Seattle because we started talking about doing things in Seattle together before there was a book tour. So, all right, let me get started. I grew up in Turkey in a family of lawyers, but I realized that I loved drawing too much to become a lawyer, so I thought architecture, until a friend of the family came to tea, and he said, architecture, have you heard of industrial design? And I said, no. And he said, look, this teacup we're using. You know how the edge is curved? It's so that you can drink from it comfortably. And it has this handle so that you can hold hot liquid in your hand without burning yourself. And the saucer is there so that if you spill some tea, you don't ruin your mom's beautiful tablecloth. And at that moment, I fell in love with the human scale of product design. And so I went to school, I changed from architecture to product design, and I did my undergraduate. And then I came to New York to do my master's. And the first class, the first day, the first hour, our teacher asked us to turn to our neighbor and to draw each other. And so today, tonight, you're probably all sitting on a postcard that has a template. And I'm going to ask you to do the same thing, to turn to each other and to draw your neighbor. And this will be our little warm-up, to warm up our right brains. Everybody find someone, your neighbor. Probably you don't know each other. All right, One little trick, though. You know the trick to drawing someone? Here's the trick. The eyes go in the middle. All right, everything else is you can do whatever you'd like. You only have 3 minutes, so no masterpieces, please. Go for it. All right. Do you need a pen? You're good? Yeah, just switch over. Does anybody need a pen? It's crucial that you do this exercise. Yes, yes, yes. It's if you want to design your life, it starts with drawing. You guys need to draw. Come on. You didn't have, there's one. You're probably sitting on it. One more. We need one more postcard. Does anybody have, may I get one from there? Ah, perfect. There you go. Trust me, it's important. You need one. You got, oh, come on, everybody needs one. That's the danger with having a microphone and walking around, because I see what you're doing. Cool. I like it. You're doing a self-portrait? Your brother, that's cool. That's cool. Nice. I like that. Beautiful. You just need the eyes. All right, how is everyone doing? One more minute. Okay. One more minute. You can do it. That's beautiful. All right. I said no masterpieces, but I see that's beautiful. Yes. It's a self-portrait. Very cool. Wow. This is not the first time you're drawing. It is tonight. Lovely. Lovely. Well done. That's wonderful. All right. Remember to sign your drawings. And then George Simmons, could you come to the front? Could everybody do a favor, do me a favor, and hold up your drawings so that George could take a picture? Yes. Woo. Everybody. Perfect. All right, so we can continue. Thank you. Thank you. Do you feel your right brains warmed up now? If you'd like, you can exchange the portraits. But here's the story. There's a magic to this exercise. First of all, thank you so much for going along with it. So when we did this, I was Ayşe Birsel from İzmir, Turkey, and next to me, the person that I drew was Rodolfo Sanchez from Argentina. And we drew each other, and he's, to this day, one of my oldest and greatest friends. So now, you might become best friends with the person that you just drew. That's the exercise. All right. And then I started designing products. And I'm one of those lucky designers that got to design a toilet seat that's designed like a chair, very comfortable and easy to clean, which was really important to me. You can snap off the lid and the seat and wash them under the faucet, really like foaming and kind of nice and clean. This was actually my very first project that I did as soon as I graduated with my teacher and mentor, Bruce Hanna, Knoll Office Accessories. They're to this day on the market, which is quite amazing. And then kitchen tools and gadgets for Target, the Giada De Laurentiis collection, and the potato peeler at $7.99, I was told is the best potato peeler on the market. So the flying pots and pans. And then the Resolve office system for Herman Miller. and even automobiles. And actually, our story starts with this automobile. In 2001, I had a new client, the French automobile manufacturer Renault. And they called me up. I had asked them if they could pair me up with one of their designers, because I was a product designer. I knew nothing about cars. And so they said, Aisha, we're going to send you one of our best designers, and you're going to love him. And apparently, they told BBSEC the same thing. You're going to love her. So then when we met, we did as we were told. We fell in love. Office romance. And after that, things started happening really fast. We had two daughters together. Bibi moved from Paris to New York with his son, Wally, and we decided to become partners and work together. We moved our home to a larger apartment to hold now the large family. And my life was designing itself, and I was really happy. And so we were working full-time, parenting like crazy, and things were really going very well until it seemed like overnight, but the economy crashed and our clients took all the work in-house, and suddenly we found ourselves with no clients, no projects, and like three kids and a family to take care of. And so I really tried very hard to find new projects, new clients. But, you know, at that time, you remember, it was a hard moment, and it was really easy for our clients to kind of cross us out and, lower their budgets, basically. So no work, I couldn't find anything. So I thought, okay, well, I'll go see some headhunters and find some work, like work for somebody. So I called up some headhunters, and some of them I knew, and I went to see them. And they basically took one look at me, and they said, you know, Aisha, you're not hireable. And I was like, really? So headhunters, whose day job is to find you jobs, right, tell you that you're unhireable, it's really worrisome. And but they didn't know what to do with me, because I had never worked in an office. I was really lucky because I got projects out of school, and then I started working for myself. I established my studio, and I had kind of a good run. And so I had never worked in an office, and I never had a boss or even a kind of an evaluation, a performance review. And so they were like, sorry. And so I went home, and I thought, this is really bad. And I started, like, when Bibi and I decided to become partners, it sounded like such a good idea, because we had met at work, we enjoyed working together, and we had joked about, like, putting all our eggs in one basket, but it's, you know, we never thought that the bottom of the basket was going to kind of fall off. And at that moment, I started questioning everything I had done up until that moment. I was like, what was I thinking? You know, why did I ever start my own studio? Why did I kind of get Bibi involved? He had a comfortable life in Paris, you know. In Paris, childcare is free, insurance, healthcare is free, schools are free. And then, of course, I thought, why didn't I become a lawyer? So I think every designer asks herself that at one point or another. But so I really didn't know what to do with myself, because I was so used to working hard and being busy with projects and deadlines. And Leah Kaplan, who's a very good friend of mine and one of my oldest collaborators, we joke about working together since we were kids. She kind of could see what was happening, that I didn't know what to do with all the time I had. So she came in one day and said, Aisha, you know what you should do is you should think about how you think, because you think differently. And I thought, I really really should do that. I held on to what she was saying, like a lifeline, because she was valuing how I thought. And so I decided to kind of think about, what's this intuitive creative process that I do, and that I seem to kind of know how to do. So I started kind of writing about it and mapping it out and sketching it. And it was really interesting because I had to go deep into myself and figure out, like, what are those moments? Like, how do I start and how do I go from this point to that point? How do I go from what I know to what I can imagine? Anyway, out of that, deconstruction and reconstruction came out. And that was my process. And two things happened. One was GE called, and they said, come and show us your work. And I thought, great. So I went and saw them. I showed them kind of like I just showed you. I showed them our, you know, product portfolio. And at the end, I showed them deconstruction, reconstruction, and said, this is our process. And so they said at the end, we hope you won't be offended, but we're not going to ask you to design anything. And I was like, but we're really interested in your process. And so with that, we got our first project with GE, deconstructing and reconstructing value of design for them. And that was kind of like a turning point. And then the second thing that happened, Shirley Moulton called. And Shirley Moulton is an old friend of mine. We were part of a women presence organization years ago. And she was just calling to kind of see how I was doing, and we started talking about, like, reminiscing about what we had done together. And she said, do you remember that one day when we were supposed to come up with one sentence to describe our strategic intention? And my sentence was, my strategic intention is to design the life I love. I had completely forgotten this. And Shirley was like, how can you forget that? I've never forgotten that. And nobody in that room ever forgot that. We talk about that to this day. And with that reminder, I thought, actually, yes. You know, I want to design the life I love. And if my life is my biggest project, and now that I have a design process, can I apply my process to my life? And Shirley had just started Academy of Life, which was about lessons we don't learn at school. And she said, look, this really is an interesting idea. If you want to do a workshop, I'll give you a workshop. And by that point, I was really humbled, and I had learned to say yes to everything. So I said yes to the idea of the workshop, even though I had never done a workshop before. And I put it together from scratch. You know, I kind of created exercises. I did them myself. I was my own first student. And then and one day I found myself in front of a group of about 15 people who were interested in designing their life. And you have to understand, I'm a product designer. And the kinds of meetings that I was used to going, they were about, like, product schedules and deadlines and criteria and engineering questions and problems. It was not about teaching people how to design their life. So I clearly remember this moment where I looked at these people, all accomplished people, you know, people with children and aging parents and interesting jobs. And I thought to myself, Aisha, do you know what you're doing? Can you, like, really teach these people how to design their lives and give something meaningful to them, basically. And that was my first workshop. And I have to tell you that I've done many workshops since. And what I've learned is that these ordinary people, and that's what I call people who are not designers, affectionately, these ordinary people are extraordinarily creative when given a process, a creative process and set of tools. And since then, they've been, you know, they'll send me notes emails. I'll run into them on the street, and they'll say, Aisha, your workshop has changed my life. And you have to understand, nobody has stopped me on the street and grabbed my arm and said, your potato peeler has changed my life. And the kinds of things they tell me, they say, you know, after your workshop, I decided to go back to school and get my MBA. Or I now empathize with my mom, and we really understand each other. I understand her. Or I started my company. Or, you know, I quit my job. And my favorite is this one person said, emailed me afterwards and said, I went back home. I taught your process to my wife. And now we design our lives together every Sunday. That's more than I do. So, you know, so things really turned out well. And if it hadn't been for that really kind of rock bottom moment, I would have never found the time or, you know, had the wherewithal to apply my process, first of all, to work on my process, but then apply my process to my life. Of course, if you ask Bibi, he'll tell you that he always knew that I was going to figure it out, you know. But what it led me to understand is that, you know, when I was growing up in Turkey, there was like a roadmap to being successful. And the same thing for Bibi. You know, when he was growing up in Paris, there was a roadmap. You know, if you did certain things, you had a good life. You know, you went to school, and then maybe you got your master's, you got a job, you got married, and that was kind of like the steps of a good life. But today, I think there are no roadmaps. You know, things have changed so quickly that there are no rules to how to have a good life. And we have two kids, and Wali, who's now studying design. We don't have a roadmap to give to them. They have to design their life and create an original life for themselves, a life that resembles them, that looks like them, that feels like them, that is coherent with who they are and their values. There are no roadmaps, which is an incredible challenge. But you know, in design, every challenge is also a great opportunity. So the opportunity is to make your own rules, to design your own life. And I realize that that's what I can teach my kids, and that's what I can teach you too. And then you can go and teach someone you love. So that's the story of Design the Life You Love. So if I may now, I'll just walk you through the book, and then I hope you'll ask me some questions. Will you ask me some questions? Yeah? All right. So this is what the book looks like. It's a very illustrative book. That's because I'm a designer, and my language is drawing. And so I drew the book, and then I wrote what I drew about. And it's based on my process of deconstruction, reconstruction, which has four steps. Deconstruction is about taking something apart so that you can see what it's made up of. And then point of view is looking at those parts and seeing them differently and shifting our point of view to a new place. And that's really the heart of creativity. And then reconstruction is putting it back together, knowing that you can't have everything, so you have to make choices. And then expression is about giving it form. So the book takes you from deconstruction all the way to expression. But in the framework or the frame mind of a designer, thinking like a designer. And thinking like a designer means, first of all, that we're thinking about something optimistically. Designers, for some reason, always believe that no matter what the problem, they're going to come up with a better solution. And that's what drives our passion. And I think you need optimism to design your life. And then holistically, seeing the big picture, asking the what if questions with empathy and in collaboration with others. And see, so this is the framework for designing anything and your life as well. You know, our lives are our shared project. That's what I love about designing your life is we all have a life, so we could apply design process to it. So the warm-up we did together, and these are my two daughters, and the trick to drawing your kids is let them play with their phone or iPad, and then you can draw them. And then deconstruction is about taking it apart. And so your life taken apart is you first look at the building blocks, what's my life made up of, and those things could be family, work, health, hobbies, places, languages, you name it. And then you kind of unpack those, and you break the building blocks apart, and you continue like that until you run out of time. So if you were to deconstruct your life, tell me, how many pages do you think it'll fit in? 10. 1. It lies somewhere in between. It fits on 2 pages. And that's it's a relief, actually, that this complex project more or less fits on 2 pages and feels much more manageable. And so that's kind of your ingredients list. And then the point of view is about, well, how can I think about that differently? Intentionally, like look at those parts and pieces and shift my point of view. And this is the heart of creativity. So part of the point of view in being able to shift it is about inspiration. Every design project starts with gathering of inspiration. And it opens our souls, our minds to what's possible and the beauty of different information that could influence us. So with that, I want to do the inspiration exercise together with you. You want to do that? All right. So open up a sketchbook or turn the backside of one of the papers that you have that were on your chair. And here's what we're going to do. Again, it's going to be a quick exercise, but I want to start to inspire you. I want you to gather inspiration by thinking about your heroes. These are people that you know, or maybe you don't know them personally, but you know of them, and that they have a quality or set of qualities that interest you, that inspire you, that maybe you aspire to have. So they can be family members, they can be designers, architects, scientists, writers, philosophers. Think of one hero. And these are not superheroes. It's just that they have something heroic in them. Write their name. Do a little doodle for their icon. How would you represent them if you did an icon? And then write their qualities that interest you. Try to write like 3 or 4 qualities. And let's just take 2-3 minutes to do this. I'll put my timer on. Don't forget the icon. A symbol for the person. Could we turn up the lights a little bit? Thank you. All right. Everybody has at least one hero and an icon, and you've written down the qualities. All right. Now this is where it becomes like a magic show. May I have one volunteer to share their hero, please? Yes. Yes. I do. Did you do an icon for him? So he's honest, resilient, happy.
Relentless.
Uh-huh.
Strong. Persistent. And he has faith in mankind.
I love that. That's a great portrait of him. Thank you. Did you do an icon?
I did. I just feel like a wavy flag. It was a nice flag. One big star because I didn't have time.
Not bad. All right. Thank you. Another hero? Yes, please. Do you want the
microphone and everything? My hero is a woman named Padma Warrior, and she's very big in the tech industry. And my icon for her is a bright star. And what I love so much about Padma is that I feel like she speaks a different language, especially as a woman in tech. And when I say a different language, I don't know how she survives in corporate America because she's so different from just the language of that place. But I feel she's got, she speaks to things like soul when she talks to employees and how to... things like digital detox, you know, taking time in our lives to get away from our devices and pay attention to artistry and poetry, and I just love that about her. I love her kindness and humility. She's a brilliant technologist. She stretches the boundaries of what's possible, and she's regarded as a warrior spokesperson for women in technology. Padma, P-A-D-M-A, warrior. Warrior, just like it sounds, yeah. Her first name is actually Padmasri, but she goes by Padma Warrior. Thank you.
Your star? It's beautiful. Thank you. All right, one more. Yes.
Marianne Williamson, because she's spiritual, intelligent, beautiful, growth-oriented, collaborative, committed, compassionate, courageous, sacred, socially responsible, driven, successful, feminine, honest, vibrant, strong, and a spiritual warrior. Courageous, committed, successful, feminine, vibrant, a spiritual warrior.
All right. So I would actually love to listen to all your heroes because your inspiration also inspires me, and I think it inspires each other. So here's what I want you to do. Well, actually, first I want to tell you, Jimmy Carter, that those qualities, honest, resilient, happy, relentless, strong, persistent, and having faith in mankind. That's you. And I don't know that those are your qualities. That's you. Yes. I don't know you, but if I'm sure. And this survivor who speaks her own language of soul and digital detox, who has kindness and humility and who stretches the boundaries. Those are your qualities. And your qualities are compassionate and socially responsible, courageous, committed, feminine, successful, spiritual. I don't know you, but if there was a friend of yours here, I'm sure that they would say, that's true. And so I want you all to cross out your heroes' names and write your own name. Those are your qualities. Those are your values. And your values are what will sustain you through the design process. This is true for product design. This is true for graphic design. The values are what sustains the process. And it's true for life as well. You know, if I were to ask you, like, what are your values? It's such a hard question. I'm sure you wouldn't have said all these things. And so that's what inspiration does. Inspiration kind of takes you on a beautiful trip and then holds a mirror to the things that will take you forward with your imagination. And I really thank you for not saying, what? We don't want to cross our names. We don't want to cross our heroes' names. Because that happened to me once when, with a similar group of people in a beautiful auditorium, I said, everybody, cross out your heroes' names. And then there was this one person who said, kind of like, she was this beautiful woman, I remember her, and her hand shot in the air, and she said, I can't. And imagine me, I'm in front of everybody, I'm on stage, and you're telling me you can't? Hold on. So I was like, oh. And so I said, you can't? Why? And she said, because I put God there. And I was like, well, okay. You keep your hero, everybody else, cross that. All right. So, and if you have the book or if you get the book, there's a beautiful exercise around metaphors, about imagining your life as a metaphor, through a metaphor. And this is very powerful because metaphors help us think about things that are complex in relation to things we know or are familiar with. And then you have to reconstruct. If you deconstruct something, you also need to reconstruct, because otherwise deconstruction by itself is quite destructive. So you need to put it back together. And when you put it back together, you can't have everything. So I give you only three circles, three things to choose that you want to spend and invest your time in. And, you know, it sounds harsh, but know that it's only pen and paper and three circles. You can redraw them. You can change them. You can do this for one day. You can do it for 3 weeks. You can do it for a year. And then just check in. And, you know, is the reconstruction still holding? And if it's not, you think about, well, what else do I want in there? But this becomes the kind of the bare bones of your design idea. And it really simplifies the complexity to say, hey, I don't have unlimited amount of time and resources, but these are the things that are important to me. They're essential. And then the expression is giving it form. It's kind of building on reconstruction and kind of drawing and writing your vision. So, and the idea is really how can you put one and one together and create something unique. So there are many different ways of expressing your ideas. And in design, you know, these things could be drawings, they could be renderings, they could be prototypes and models. And in your life, it's the same thing. You can draw it, you can write about it, you can do a to-do list, you can write a manifesto. And if you're like me, you can do a vision map. And I'm sharing this with you and everybody because I just want you to know that you can be playful and you can have big ideas. So my vision map is that I want to be the Katy Perry of Design the Life You Love. Look, I'm here, right? To me, like, this is Madison Square Garden. And I'm not singing, but what I love about Katy Perry, and I know about her because I have two young kids, is that she connects with young girls and their parents, especially their moms, through the beauty of music. And I thought to myself, I want to do the same thing. I want to connect with young people and their parents through the power of design. And that show people that you can transform your life by designing it. So now you know my dream. And of course, the trick with this is I drew this on a big easel page and put it on my bedroom wall and showed it to Bibi. And I said, this is what I'm planning to do. And he said, sounds good to me. And I showed it to my kids, and that's the dangerous part, because a couple weeks ago, my little one, 10-year-old Alev, she came to me and she said, Mom, when are we going on tour? And she's talking about the tour. Anyways, she came with me to LA last weekend, so that was not too bad. And then you get to design and live your life, prototype it. You try it out, and then you kind of refine it, and you try it out again, and you go ahead and design the life you love. Good luck. All right, now I want questions. Do we have time? Oh, great question. Thank you. I wish I did. Thank you. The pants are actually one of my examples in the book. They're by Issey Miyake. And just to show how great creative people can change the way we think about things and turn constraints into opportunities, he came up with these, what he calls pleats please, because he was asked to design a travel line, like a travel collection of clothing. What happens when you travel to your clothes? Exactly. And so this is made up of wrinkles. The whole thing is wrinkled. And so what he did is, instead of trying to get rid of wrinkles, he embraced them and he said, I'm going to wrinkle the whole thing, but I'm going to do it in a beautiful way. So I'm glad that you said it, and that's one of my favorite examples. Yes, great question. I asked the same thing myself. And oh, sure, I can repeat the question. The question is, after you're done with your Katy Perry tour, and like I have to go back to normal life, am I going to go back to product design or go back to writing? You know, I ask myself that, but right now I'm really enjoying being in this moment because it took so much work and kind of effort to get to touring some of my favorite cities and meeting you all and talking about, you know, how the book came to be, that I think I will always design because I love designing. But Design the Life You Love has fundamentally changed the way our office works. So we used to think of ourselves as product designers. Now we think of ourselves as people who try to design better lives. And everything is in the context of life within which products are props, basically. And we, the deconstruction, reconstruction, Design the Life You Love and doing workshops around it has really simplified our process to a level where we can share it with everyone. And we share it with our clients. And we share it even with their users to co-design together. And those things really fascinate me. So I'll go back to that. And then what I learned from that, I do hope to continue writing. So first I need to kind of, you can give me ideas about, like, after Design the Life You Love, what should I write? But that's the plan. Design the products you love. That would be great. Yes. Oh, great question. What was the most challenging product that I designed, right? And why was it so challenging? Two things come to my mind. One is the toilet seat, and the other is the office system. Which one do you want to hear about? Thank you. Me too. The toilet seat. You know, I call the toilet seat the forgotten product because nobody wants to think about it. But the toilet seat was both a challenge and a great opportunity because nobody had really designed a good toilet seat. You know, most toilet seats are just a plastic cover for the toilet, and they're not comfortable. And so one day I realized that a toilet seat is made up of two words, right? Toilet and seat. And I grabbed onto the seat portion of things and I thought, it's a seat. I can design it like a seat. So that's why the back of it should go up a little bit and then it should be wide enough because, frankly, we're wide. And the front of it should go down a little bit. And so we realized that the toilet seat, the thing that goes on your toilet, doesn't have to follow the shape of the bottom. And so that was the breakthrough. And we were able to really design something that's designed like a chair, except that it has a hole in it. What made it challenging is that I designed the toilet seat for Toto in Japan, which is a Japanese company. This was before Toto became really well known in the States. And for my team, I was this young woman who was a foreigner, and they were like, why should we trust her? Who's she to tell us how to design a toilet? We're very successful with our toilets. And so one of the things I had asked them was a toilet seat needs to be easy to clean. And they were like, they're easy to clean. I'm like, have you ever cleaned your toilet? And they were like, no. You have to imagine, this was like 20 years ago, where it's just me and then 9 men in the room. And they had never done it. So I said, okay, you go back home, you clean your toilets, and then we'll talk about it. And they're sweethearts because they did go back and they cleaned their toilets. And Monday they came back and they said, okay. I think their wives were really surprised. They said, okay, we'll make it easy to clean. And so that whole idea of making the lid and the seat come out and having minimum amount of corners and crevices that you cannot get into, we try to really make it very easy to clean. and then very comfortable to sit on. So those were the convincing the engineers was kind of my biggest challenge. And but one, you know, what was lovely is once they got behind the idea, then they were like 100%. Yes. Ah, how it matters. You know, one example I'll give you. Oh yes, what did she say? Sorry. The difference between designing people who design products versus people who strive to design better lives. So this thing that I talked about, now we think of ourselves as designers of life, right? Okay, so that's a great question. It's a big question. So I'll try to answer it as I know how. What we realized is that people are capable of designing their whole life, right? I learned that from doing the workshops, and that they're incredibly imaginative. So then I was interested, and I saw that as an experiment. I thought, okay, let's try it, and it worked. Then my next question was, like, if people can design their whole life, can we get them to design a portion of their life? And so we put together what we called Design the Experience You Love. And so we got to work on that to get people, like users, to design a portion of their life. For example, the laundry experience they love. And what we learned from that, in a nutshell, is that a manufacturer of a washer-dryer, for example, thinks about the product, because that's what they're making. How should I make the knobs, the size, you know, make it watertight, right? Those things. But the user doesn't think in those terms. The user thinks, how am I going to get my kid to do the laundry?
Right.
How am I... Why can't I just wash one thing? I just want to wash what I wore today. Why do my socks disappear? These are the things that the user are interested in. They see in a whole experience. They don't see the product. They see their life in which there is this washing machine. And so that's the difference, and that's what shifted our perspective. And we're now working on how can we narrow the gap between how our clients think and how the actual users think. Because the way the users think, and because they see the whole picture, you can design new businesses out of it. It's things like they think, okay, well, why can't I control my laundry machine? I'm telling you all the secrets, but okay. Can I use my phone to operate my machine? Which is obvious, right? But that's not where they stop. They say, why can't you make it into a game? And the points I earn, I can use for something. And then I can get my kids to play the game, and the points they earn turns into something. And so it's fascinating, isn't it? It's like, so anyways, that's kind of the big shift. One more question. Sorry. Oh, my design hero. I have a couple. Well, there's one hero. Now, then you're going to ask me to cross out my name? Yeah, I'm on to you. The hero in the book is Rowena Reed Costello. And she has her book. You can get her book. And Rowena Reed Costello was my teacher when I went to Pratt. We just knew that she was 80-plus years old, but we didn't know her age. I think she was 84. And she was this formidable woman, and she had, with her husband, she had invented the whole idea of how to teach people, designers, how to design in three dimensions. And she was this... She basically taught people how to design in three dimensions like musicians would learn music. She would teach us the notes, the rhythm, kind of the contrast. And she would say, you have to find the dominant element, the subdominant element, and the subordinate element. And the three of them in tension will make a beautiful form. And she was strong. She had a very strong will. She loved what she did. and she was a teacher. And it's funny because I realized afterwards that I am trying to be like her, and I want to grow old like her, doing what she's doing, and I have a process. And so it's she's Rowena Reed Costello, and the idea of those three things I talked about, that comes from her. It's really, what's the dominant of your life? What's the subdominant of your life? And what's the subordinate of your life? And how are they in beautiful tension? That's a life design. I think that's the end of it, right? Thank you so much. Thank you.
The podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.